Hi, my name is Stuart Weems and welcome to the Investopoly podcast. My goal is to share easy to understand evidence-based holistic insights to help you master the game of building wealth. And in my regular weekly episodes on Wednesday, I talk about the theories, methodologies and principles associated with investing. The aim of these case study episodes is to share how the application of that approach works out in real life situations. So today I want to talk about a client that we've been working with for the past 13 odd years. We started working together in 2011. Unfortunately, the client went through a marital separation in 2018 and the financial settlement went through in 2019. As is always the case, it tends to take a few months or even years to get to the point where both spouses agree on how to separate assets and their entitlement and so forth. Now, when we met the client in 2011, he went through his first marital separation. And unfortunately, we tried to counsel the client to obtain what's called a binding financial agreement. Sometimes it's called a prenup, but really just an agreement between him and his new, at that point, girlfriend or partner in order to document, you know, what happens in the event of a relationship breakdown. Now, I think BFAs, binding financial agreements, they're very much a personal thing. I can sit back as a financial advisor and say to people, yes, you've got to go get one. But I understand that there's sometimes some reluctance in order to do that. And it really is a personal choice of whether that's appropriate or not. From a pure financial standpoint, of course, from my perspective, it makes complete sense and also gives us some firm kind of rules or understanding in terms of planning around, you know, what happens in the event of a marital breakdown, how are we going to split those assets, what are we going to keep, and we can certainly take that into account from a planning perspective. Anyway, wasn't meant to be in this situation. So we sold the family home, we had to do that. We had to give his ex-wife a lot of money and also split a little bit of super with her. Now, I tried to split as little super as possible. So I was more willing to give her cash, so assets outside super, than give her too much super, particularly given my client was keen to retire relatively soon. So once that split was determined in terms of what share of the asset pool will she get, we developed a plan. And the plan was, okay, well, let's pay her out. Let's work for another 6 years. Remember, this is 2019. And let's retire in 6 years' time. And so as a result of that planning exercise, that's when we realized, hey, let's try and keep as much super as possible. So the client already owned a few investment properties, about 4 investment properties in total. And because we felt that those investment properties were intrinsically undervalued, we certainly wanted to keep hold of them. And we also wanted to keep hold of the gearing. The client earns a substantial income. So the gearing really suited him from a strategy and cash flow perspective and so forth. And so he's got 2 investment grade apartments that are owned by a family trust. Now, we were quite reluctant to put properties in a family trust environment, mainly because of land tax. But anyway, his previous accountant structured them that way many years ago when he first purchased them. He owns 1 house in personal names, an investment property. It's a house, and 1 apartment in a self-managed super fund. And we ended up buying a villa unit as a replacement family home, because obviously he sold the family home that he cohabitated with his ex-wife. And we bought a villa unit in a great blue chip suburb in Melbourne that's done quite well. Now, because his strategy included quite a bit of gearing, the strategy was to always reduce gearing post-retirement, so in the first year of retirement. And the strategy that we mapped out was to sell 2 of the 4 investment properties when he goes into retirement. Now, which of those investment properties we will sell really will depend on, you know, the performance at the time and the impact and interest rates and these sorts of things. But notionally, we thought we'd sell the 1 in super. And that's important because in his situation, he's going to need to pay a pension, you know, to live off the super. And obviously, the amount of income that you enjoy net of expenses from property is pretty low as a percentage. You know, maybe it's 1 or 2% per year, not really enough to pay a pension. So we want some liquidity there. So we'll sell the 1 in super. And then we're probably going to sell 1 either in the family trust or in his personal name. Again, it's going to depend on, you know, how those particular assets are behaving and what interest rates look like and so forth. So the client's about a year away from planned retirement. In fact, whether he retires next year, and we'll see how that works out. But it's pleasing to know that he's broadly on track. And I guess there's a few observations that I can share with you in respect to that, because we did the financial planning and the financial projections about 5 years ago. So the client owns a variety of different assets, commercial property through a syndicated arrangement, and he's got direct residential property. Of course, he's got a lot of shares inside his super as well, and also some outside super in a trust environment. And when we came to do the projections, obviously we need to assume returns are on a straight line basis, whereas actually the equity market over the last 5 years has done better than average, so better than expected. And the property market has done not as well as expected, particularly in Melbourne. And so what it does is reinforce the benefit of having that diversification across different asset classes, because they will perform differently at different times. And it's good that the equities have performed well, because that's the liquid element to the assets, and it allows us then to hang on to the property assets for a little bit longer. Whereas if you put all your eggs into one basket, you have much less flexibility, and you don't get the opportunity to smooth returns out at a portfolio level. The second observation is divorce is expensive, of course. That's sort of stating the obvious, and protecting assets is obviously one way to sort of protect yourself from that eventuality, and using a binding financial agreement will certainly go a long way to doing that. It's not an absolute protection, but certainly you'll be better off for having one than not. And planning's critical, making sure that you plan if you're going to go through a marital separation, even if you aren't, and having a good long-term plan is kind of critical to understanding the mix of assets that you need to use, and how are you going to deal with debt as you get into retirement. So having a debt repayment or debt exit strategy, which again is going to really depend on how market conditions are behaving at the time of retirement. But it's really, I guess, in a way, plan for the worst, hope for the best. So I thought it was a really good example of how we've kind of helped that client through that pretty traumatic life event, and then how the planning and certainly asset allocation has served him really well and put him in a really good position now to potentially enter into retirement if he wants to at some point after next year. Okay, so thanks for listening. Again, if you like the episode, like the case study, please share it amongst anyone that you think will get some value from it. And until tomorrow, bye for now.